churchy words. These are the words you hear in church. Sometimes you hear them outside of church. These words have been around so long, and so often are they used that they seem to have an obvious meaning. Salvation, for instance. Everyone knows what that means. Resurrection, forgiveness, Jesus, even God. Now, God isn't really a churchy word. You find the word God outside of Christianity, of course. Yet according to Christian historian Larry Hurtado, Christianity shaped what we think of as God even in the generic form. The concept of God or gods was changed by Christianity and redefined. His book is Destroyer of the Gods, Early Christian Distinctiveness in the Roman World. There are times in which societies go through a great deal of change, and during these periods of change, words change their meaning. Concepts change. The late Marcus Borg, in his book Speaking Christian, How Christian Words Have Lost Their Meaning and How They Can Be Restored, is in the tradition of reclaiming. He seeks to reclaim the depth of meaning of Christian words that he feels have been distorted by a version of Christianity that is loud and dominant. He calls this distortion heaven and hell Christianity. And through this distorted lens of heaven and hell, all Christian words and concepts are warped, like looking at yourself in a funhouse mirror. A few weeks ago, I talked about salvation. And salvation is more than, not even really, just being saved from hell and saved for heaven. But as Borg points out, the word and the concept is far greater depth and breadth. Liberation, whole homecoming, wholeness, not only for individuals, but for communities, for society, for earth itself. So Borg wants us to see churchy words through a longer and deeper lens of vision. And that's been his project, to reclaim these words from modern distortions, particularly the distortion of modern fundamentalist Christianity. And I think it's a worthwhile project, and that's why I'm doing an entire series of sermons on it. And I should note that there are other ways to approach this. If Borg is reclaiming Christian words, there are others who seek to revise them, even put them on a shelf. In this latter view, the words have so much baggage that we would be better off not using them. Our understanding of the universe has changed so much and has changed so fast that Christian words are just too small to help us navigate this change. We should, as Gavin Rumney of New Zealand says, rake through the ashes of Christendom and discover what's been worthwhile and revise it for the future. We hear the word post-Christian associated with this view. At our last Jesus seminar last fall, we had speakers, it seemed, from each camp. The topic was God, and Jeff Robbins thought that we need to reclaim the word, whereas Tom Sheehan thought it was time to give God a break and talk about other things. If there's a point that I want to make, it's this one. I want to avoid dismissing either approach prematurely. I want to avoid saying one or the other approach is out of bounds. We don't know what the boundaries even are anymore. That's what change means. Change means that the boundaries lose their distinctiveness. So we may be involved in a combination of reclaiming and revising, and we cannot know how it will all wash out before it happens. That's why, as the sportscasters say, they play the game. So I suggest we explore these approaches with open minds and not be too anxious about it all. In my pastor's page in this month's newsletter, I quoted from an article in PRRI, which is a research institute on religion and culture. And the article was entitled Exodus, Why Americans Are Leaving Religion and Why They're Unlikely to Come Back. And the article provided this eye-opener. The reasons Americans leave their childhood religion are varied, but a lack of belief in the teaching of religion was the most commonly cited reason for disaffiliation. Among the reasons Americans identified as important motivations in leaving their childhood religion are they stopped believing in the religion's teachings, 60%. Their family was never that religious when they were growing up, 32%. And their experience of negative religious teachings about or treatment of gay and lesbian people, 29%. But let me read the money quote again. A lack of belief in teaching of religion was the most commonly cited reason for disaffiliation. So whether we call them churchy words or beliefs, they've become a problem. So it seems to me, since we're in the business, we ought to study this research. What is it about our language, our beliefs, our churchy words that's turning people off? Maybe we need to reclaim the language. Maybe we need to revise the language. But it certainly is in our interests to have the conversation. Now, Southminster's been doing this for some time. We're a bit ahead of the curve. This congregation engages seriously about language that we use in worship, for example, regarding gender. This congregation engages in strong educational programs, our weekly Sunday morning programs, our programs in the evenings. We host West Star, or the Jesus Seminar events every year. And this one coming up is going to be very good. It's entitled Christianity, God, and the Future of Religion. The title of that presentation is my sermon series in a nutshell. Tell your friends, it's a great evangelistic opportunity. Evangelistic, there's a churchy word. Some people may be involved in their communities, including the one here at Southminster, in spite of the churchy words. The community, the relationships we've built, our activities, our commitments, our programs, seek to expand our awareness and make this community a positive contributor. My goal, to be right up front with you, my goal is to have the language and the words that we use in worship, the songs we sing in worship, the resources that we use inspire what we do. And that's why what you'll find here is, in some ways, a bit different from other congregations. For instance, we use secular poetry and language from other wisdom traditions. That's revising worship. We also use familiar rituals like communion and words in broader and deeper ways. That's reclaiming. I don't particularly find it interesting to have a bunch of churchy words sitting there in the bulletin that we recite and then have that unrelated to the good work that we do. I don't think that's sustainable. The words we use must be connected to the good that we do. And if there's a disconnect, the change needs to happen with the words, not the good deeds. And I think this is why at least some, maybe many, people are finding church not interesting. The words don't match their reality. Many churches, and certainly our denominational houses, are not creative nor courageous enough to recognize the disconnect and try new things. And that's why I like serving this congregation, among many reasons. We are, in a sense, an experimental community. We're trying things, pushing the envelope, being a bit scandalous if we need to, in order to bring awareness to the importance of words. And you've been doing this long before I got here. That's why I came here. If we have words and rituals that are fresh, crisp, expansive, revealing, sharpening, engaging, then they can in turn inform and ignite what we do. So today's churchy word is God. What is God like? And in Marcus Borg's two chapters in his book, Speaking Christian, he sees God as a parallel for, in non-religious language, what we would call reality. What is reality like? Albert Einstein waxed poetic when he said, "The question before us is this: is the universe friendly?" You see this on bumper stickers and t-shirts. It isn't in the form of God language, but it's the secular equivalent. And these are some of the answers people have to the questions of what God is like. Life is beautiful. Life is good. Life sucks, then you die. The world hates me. Who cares? The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. Love your enemies. Walk softly, but carry a big stick. I belong. I don't fit in. There's no place like home. The Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. In an ocean of goodness, a cup full of dark can only prevail for so long. The good you do is meaningless. You can't fight City Hall. You are dust, and to dust you shall return. The universe cares not that you exist. You are the consciousness of the universe. You are a series of chemical reactions. You are stardust. You are loved. All of those statements are about what God is like, and none of them use the term God. They are secular ways of addressing what God language in the past has always addressed. Is God, is reality, is life good or bad or indifferent? And how we answer that question, says Borg, matters. It shapes how we live. These three views, good, bad, and indifferent, are all found within our religious tradition. For example, from the Psalms, I am but a worm and not a human, scorned by everyone, despised by the people. Also from the Psalms, I praise you because I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. From Jesus, you're the light of the world. From Jesus, you who are evil. In the Hebrew Scriptures, vanity of vanity, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And the New Testament, the sun rises on the evil and the good, it rains on the just and the unjust. The question is not whether God exists or God doesn't exist. The question is, what's God like? What's life like? And to the point, what's your life like? What are you worth? Is life worth living? Is life worth living well? What will you do with your one wild and precious life? Asks Mary Oliver. And you can't really answer those questions by looking at the externals of whether it happens to rain or the sun happens to shine on your life at the moment. It's more than feelings that come and go. You can't have others answer the question for you. Otherwise, you just hand over your agency to somebody else. It's your life, your God. To answer the question of God requires trust. You have to reach for it. You have to reach deep within. What is God like? What are you like? Good, bad, indifferent? And it isn't a one-size-fits-all answer. It isn't a one-time-forever answer. It's the mystery of existence. Who knows? But isn't it nice to be in a place to explore all of it? Without judgment, without needing to assent, a place to question, to discover, to grow. Amen.